Very well. Hello, my fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to tonight's most, I mean, the most...
This week's most special.
The most special sex talk ever. Tonight, we're going to deviate from our usual format. Instead of talking about sex, we're going to talk about something that has merely sexual undertones, that is...
Oral sex.
No, I'm referring, of course, to, like, the American male hegemony's need to display its huge turgid erect penis by, you know, subjugating the poorest and weakest country on the earth, of course, Afghanistan. And tonight I have three very special guests in the audience, along with my beleaguered co-hosts, Lance.
Yeah,
Payne. And the other
Dr. Sexopoulos.
I have three activists.
So we're not going to be talking about experts? Sex tonight? I'm confused.
I don't know.
Activists have sex, too.
We'll come back to this. We'll come back to this.
I'm wearing my...
Okay, because, I mean, we'll need contract renegotiation if this turns into...
I'm sorry. I just... these are
politics
different
TV
defense, but I realize I'm not wearing any underwear. If you look carefully, you can actually see little...
For our listeners who may be confused...
As he sticks a fork.
For our listeners who are confused, DJ Corey is now talking about his pants.
And what lies beneath.
I'd like to remind our listeners that if they'd like to talk about sex, or if perhaps they've had sex at some point in their life, they can give us a call at 412-621-9728 or 412-268-9728.
That's WRCT for those
yes.
of you who are...
But let's let our guests introduce themselves.
Okay, I'll go first. I'm Brenda.
From Wexford. Our only listener.
Right.
Yeah.
Personal friend of Christina Aguilera.
Exactly.
Wait, so who's listening to the show now? No one?
Well, we will copy a CD for her so she can listen to it later.
Yeah, I'll listen to the soundtrack later
and
go,
went
wow.
to summer camp and you asked me to write you and I didn't. I'm sorry.
I
thought
know.
It would make you want me more if
I
didn't.
Was
right,
sad.
If I was hard to get. Really?
I got, you know how much mail I got this summer at camp?
Mailbags full? Dozens and dozens?
I can count how much mail I got while I'm wearing mittens. I got two letters.
Two.
I got two letters, and both were
so
from
even
my
if your
father.
Thumbs were cut off, and you were wearing mittens, is what you were saying.
Yeah, they're both from my father, saying I owed him money. So
was this some sort of sex camp?
No. It's Girl Scout camp. So take it as you will.
If my experiences at Boy Scout camp were any indication. It was nonstop hot tears of humiliation.
Wait, and that's sexy, though, right? To some.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not telling you where the tears came from.
I've been told, you know, I've been told that what's the only weak thing about our show is our intros. I've been told it takes us a long time to get to the point.
Okay.
Do you think that's true?
Well, we've got two more people to
let's move right along.
I'm Mark.
Mark.
I've been camped out at the fence for a while now.
When you say camped out of the fence, you're referring to this, like, lengthy, annoying tradition of Carnegie Mellon people that you know, what you can do at midnight is to take the fence if you're an organization, and then you're permitted to take the fence.
Don't you have to sign up?
Did you take the fence?
No, you can only take the fence. It's squatter's rights. If somebody's there, you can't take it.
It's sort of like...
So you can squat there for as long as ever?
Sorry. The strongest group gets the fence. That's the way it works.
Well,
there's no fairness or justice.
There are clearly some pre-rangers that work out, because some groups clearly get it at the same time.
Right. Yeah, but they camp like 3 days in advance.
So what's the longest record for fence camping?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I mean, conceivably somebody can camp at the entire semester, right?
Are you students at Carnegie Mellon University?
I'm the only student here, I believe.
Oh, interesting.
Wow.
So I'm not a student
anymore. So you're bringing in these foreigners to seize the vital assets of our small, beleaguered nation?
That's the point I was assuming. You guys are going to stay there forever, right? This isn't going back to the students ever again, right? Okay, good.
Intriguing.
There's a lot of
interim fence government. Anyway, so that's two down, one to go.
Yes.
I am Anpeo from What Collective, which is just a local kind of activist group. And we're
Anpeo?
Anpeo means child of the sun.
It so. Does.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is that like in what language?
In Lakota.
That's what, Indian or something?
Yeah, like, you would know it as Sioux, but that's actually a pretty derogatory term.
Did you say I would know it as Sioux?
Well, like, it's taught.
I mean, because I only
it's
know derogatory
no,
terms?
No, I mean,
like,
well, you
taught,
did say
it's
Indian.
It's taught in schools as Sioux.
Whitey. And I guess you are DJ Cracker for tonight.
Like, I don't know, like, what TV shows you guys have been watching, but America is, like, post-politically correct now. Like, we're back. Indian is perfectly acceptable again.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the whole PC thing, like, shot itself in the head and died pretty much. I think it got to the point where you couldn't say person because it had the word son in it. And so it was, like, you couldn't have a male person as in, like, the mailman. Because you couldn't say mailman because right, it's man. Right. A male person still
well,
got
male
son.
Also is
and male is male. And yeah. So you just completely, it was a vicious cycle.
Well, see, does that mean I can know? Now we have mail carrier, which has the word care in it.
Right. Oh.
But it still has mail. The object of mail, it's not a parcel, it's mail. So therefore, it's still, you know, it's a robberous. It's an erroborous cycle that
I
just keeps going.
I thought nobody sent you letters anyway.
Ah, good point.
That's a camp.
So does this mean that I can go back to calling, I can no longer call herpes his piece?
I don't know, I kind of like that one.
We're making sex talk herstory tonight.
Well, perhaps herpes provides an excellent segue into the true purpose of the visit of our guest here tonight.
To catch diseases from our couch?
Great!
I need a prune.
Which is, did he just say I need a prune?
Yes.
Which is to talk about...
Are we making you all constipated?
Sorry. Which is to talk about oral genital STD transmission, or as some people call it, the current U.S. political and military involvement in Afghanistan.
Do you want to...
Operation Enduring Penicillin?
So, yes. Well, sadly, penicillin is not effective against herpes, although that's
true
here or there. So you guys brought the axe. We'll let you start grinding it right now.
Okay, so everyone's looking at me.
Are they?
That's because you're in the middle.
Fine. So we're all representatives, I guess, of the Pittsburgh Anti-War Coalition, which for the Carnegie Mellon people know, we have been camped out center of campus for about a week now. And it's a Pittsburgh-wide thing, which is why they're non-students here. And we're collecting blankets to be sent over to the refugee camps because, sadly enough, there actually are victims of this war, despite what the media might be telling you. 1.5 million new refugees have been created since September 11th, and we're doing our best to send blankets over there.
Trying desperately to resist mentions of smallpox.
Let's hope not this time. The Mennonite Church has actually been giving aid to the Afghan people for some years now, so... We're going through them. They've been working on making comforters for a while now, and they will be, like, hand-delivered through the Mennonite community.
I have a couple things to say. One, it's about time the Mennonites started pulling their own weight. I don't know. Second, it's nice that the refugees will have these hand-knitted, you know...
Heirloom quality
Americana-style quilts to keep themselves warm. Although, I should say, it's impossible for anyone of any political stripe to argue with humanitarian relief of giving blankets to the Afghan refugees.
No, you're wrong. People will argue with us all the time.
Well, yeah. Perhaps, but they're largely controlled by their alien overlords. Just to cause confusion. And we should point out that refugees are no stranger to Afghanistan. There are probably, what, 2 to 3 million?
There were six million refugees
scattered around Pakistan, Iran. I don't know how many were in the sort of former Soviet republics. But, I mean, even before the current events, you know, Afghanistan was desperately poor with a desperately huge refugee problem. And that, you know, certainly hasn't gotten any better. It's gotten worse since the election.
No, correct. In fact, this should be an ongoing, you know, humanitarian aid. This shouldn't just because there's a war. Well, great. We agree that, in fact, you know, there are 7.5 million refugees now. This is a huge problem that won't end when the war ends. So we have to keep continuing to give aid.
Well, there are, in fact, like, it seems like a huge effort to brought. Huge efforts afoot right now to put together like these multinational aid coalitions and collections and so forth.
Well, correct. And in fact, that's something we clearly support, that, you know, despite our politics at getting aid to the refugees, like you said, I doubt that there's anyone going to be there saying, no, you shouldn't be sending these people blankets, send bombs into the refugee camps. Although there are a few.
Yeah. there's always the few that slip through, you know.
Just out of curiosity, what do they say?
We had this great guy come up and yell.
Oh, blankets to Ground Zero.
Yeah, he's like, how many blankets are you sending to Ground Zero? And I went to Ground Zero a few weeks back during Thanksgiving. I'm not sure if he knows this, there are in fact no people living there. There's in fact rubble. And this is obviously a clear tragedy, but we're trying to help the people who can be helped, opposed to the people who are already killed.
Yeah.
And as much as we can mourn for those that we lost, there are still people alive who need our help. So to the strange person who was screaming at me, Well, we would like to do everything we can to help the domestic problems. We'd also like to help the people across the world who also need our help.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I mean, how many lives can be resurrected through the bombing of other people and through the death of other people?
7 or 8.
Well, I was going to say, how many lives can be resurrected by throwing blankets on them?
Yeah, no, you know?
Let's go take handmade quilts and throw them on Ground Zero and watch the buildings rise.
True. Laffin dealt with this repeatedly in the 60s. Well, I will say one thing. You guys, controversy isn't created by uncontroversial stance like that of giving blankets.
Blankets
right?
are good.
Yeah, blankets are good. People like blankets. They remind us of
blankets
warm,
are warm.
So, right. So clearly you guys are going beyond that.
Okay, guilty, fine. We are the anti-war coalition. We clearly oppose this war. Mm-hmm. And our slogans has been blankets, not bombs, that the U.S. bombing campaign has made it very difficult to get these blankets and other donations
into
types the
of
camps.
Aid.
And so we believe that the bombing must stop. We are not opposed to peacekeeping troops, but we are opposed to aerial campaigns that make it hard to get help to the people who we are trying to help.
This is something that you'll have to enlighten me. As far as I can tell, the military actions are now limited towards a couple relatively small parts of the country because the rest of it is under the Northern Alliance and sort of theoretically, in the future, a UN-backed broad-based government control. Are the U.S. bombing campaigns interfering with humanitarian operations in that 90% of the country?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, they are. Yes. They have been previously, and things aren't being done to fix that, as well as new problems being created.
And it's very difficult reading the news because you see that there's a bombing campaign in Kandahar, and you read that the Northern Alliance is making gains. What you don't read is that there are 220,000 refugees right outside the city who had to leave because their homes were destroyed, and that's never reported, and that's the people we're trying to help. We can't reach there because there's a war going on, and
exactly.
bombs are dropping on the aid workers.
So there's no question there's a war going on, bombs are dropping in Kandahar. My previous question, which I'm not quite sure you fully answered, was is the clearly previous military actions impaired humanitarian efforts. The 90% of the country that's now under Northern Alliance control, are U.S. military actions directly?
Yes, we are stopping trucks at the border of Pakistan and inspecting them and holding them up, and huge food shipments, same with Uzbekistan, cannot go through because the U.S. military has clamped down on Afghanistan.
Okay, so
previous food shipments that were already in place to help these refugees before the war began are now being disrupted by the war.
And does the U.S. government, what do they claim about, what's the...
The government's claim is they want to make sure that there are no weapons being going in. And in some ways that we can understand this, that we don't want this thing to escalate by outside forces. At the same time, we don't think it's important. We don't find any justification in holding up food shipments.
So are they actually – have they closed the border or are they just delaying the food shipments?
They're just delaying.
They're delaying.
Okay.
It, but delays, as we all know.
No, I understand delays can be deadly.
As we all know through the wonders of PennDOT, delays can be deadly.
I believe that DJ Carr can testify that PennDOT inspired delays in getting food have been gruesomely affecting his life.
Well, you're all just kids, but in the back in the 60s, PennDOT kills was a rallying cry.
62.
But yeah, and also the thing that a lot of people don't realize is, or at least that I feel a lot of people don't realize with what's going on, is these people that, the terrorist attacks and everything. We're saying, came from these people are hiding in Afghanistan, and these people came, or they came from Afghanistan, but bombing a target, you cannot bomb something and only hit one person. It's not physically possible, and so we're saying all these innocent lives were lost, all these innocent lives were lost, Ground Zero, and yet we're taking innocent lives in Afghanistan, and those lives aren't even being acknowledged. Those people don't even seem to count according to the media, according to what people are being told. And so, just that whole, it doesn't equate. It doesn't seem to, there's no equation there that makes it right or logical at all. But then there's the whole thing of the military and logic not at all being related.
Well, one can make a couple of replies to that. One, is that the bombing campaign has been actually spectacularly precise. If you look at it historically in terms of, the objectives gained, the number of innocent lives lost. Innocent lives lost are always a bad thing. However, in every violent military action, there are always innocent lives lost. Not saying that's a good thing, but it always happens, right?
And similarly, compared to the mass bombings in World War II.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, or Laos and Vietnam.
Right. And the second response would be the figures we're getting on casualties out of innocent casualties out of Afghanistan, one way or the other, are both like so unreliable as to be unbelievable, right? Like, on the one hand, you have the military saying maybe a dozen. On the other hand, you have the Taliban saying thousands.
Well, it's very difficult. But at the same time, even if we're going to focus on non-civilian casualties, this prison revolt where 800 prisoners of war were killed, I mean, clearly something is going on in this country where there's this massive bloodshed. The Northern Alliance moves into Kabul and summarily executes 500 Taliban members, you know, having been taken prisoners of war. That even so, this is a bloody campaign, no matter what side you look on. Even if we can't trust all of the numbers, we know something is wrong, that, you know, we're not quite comfortable with what's going on. People don't realize Kabul has 2 million people in it. That would have made it the fourth largest city in America. You know, and you drop bombs for 11 days, 12 days, I don't know how long our bombing campaign was, you're going to be killing civilians, no matter how, you know, accurate your smart bombs
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, your arguments are essentially centered around the fact that there are civilian casualties and that's bad. What usually gets weighed in the political arena are, you know, how justified sort of the political action is.
I mean, politics right. is at international scale, especially when it turns yeah. violent, is a cold-hearted business, right? And,
well, absolutely.
You know, these calculations are made, well, if we accidentally kill one innocent but yet kill Hitler as a baby, like, it's worth it. You know, like, that kind of calculation
there's
happens.
No,
I was just elaborating on your point. I'm trying to get a cheap chuckle out of it.
There's usually no time travel element in modern politics, but...
Well, on your primitive...
I wouldn't be surprised if Rumsfeld sort of went off in one of his press conferences. But, so, for example, in the Bosnian conflict, this came
where
up with where the bombing campaign had sort of this greater goal of preventing sort of ethnic cleansing and preventing a continuing long-term civil war that, you know, had some pretty gruesome effects, right?
Yep.
And again, that had to be weighed against the potential, I mean, I hate that, you know, the military term is as sort of troublingly euphemistic as it gets, collateral damage, that included civilian casualties, right? That was a sort of an agonizing decision at a couple levels for the United States government. With this one, where clearly the perceived vital U.S. interests are at stake, right, that discussion doesn't come up quite as much.
No.
But there's still, you know, the U.S. is still, again, like, bending over, the U.S. is still bent over backwards to try to minimize stuff. It looks incredibly weaselly when clearly U.S. bombs are killing civilians and the Defense Department goes out of its way to sort of spin and propagandize that. Although, at another level, you know, that's what the military does, and you sort of have to you sort of have to factor that in. Well, and people discount that when they not everybody, but lots of people, most sensible political observers sort of discount that when they listen to what the military actually has to say.
Oh, no, absolutely, that the military propaganda budget, you know, just to release and disseminate information is billions of dollars. And you know, when you have the French and British press releasing, you know, hundreds of civilians killed in accidental bombing raids, Pentagon coming forward saying we looked at the footage, no, you sort of have to wonder, you know, why our allies are snitching on us. At the same time,
well, I don't think anyone accused France of being an ally of the U.S.
But yeah, all that, no, I agree. All of that being said, though, you know, even if you look at the Bosnian campaign, we dropped a cluster bomb on an open air market. And,
well,
you know,
undoubtedly it wasn't done. I mean, undoubtedly it wasn't done on purpose.
We actually, like, personally, I just oppose many of these tactics. Such as, I'm not going to speak for the group. I don't see any justification of using cluster bombs on civilian populations. It's one thing to do it to an airstrip. It's another thing to drop it to a city.
But I mean, did the U.S. drop a cluster bomb on an open air market intentionally on the open air market?
Well,
or was it an accident? Were they going for military?
The simple risk of accidentally doing one and killing hundreds of civilians to me does not outweigh the small amount of, you know,
wasn't,
the cluster bombs.
Wasn't the way that happened also the fact that the military's map was outdated to the point?
The Chinese embassy.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, no,
like, the you would think that the military, with all their, you know, they've got these cameras on satellites that can take a picture of what color, like what my earrings look like, that I'm like, if I'm walking across the campus here, well, I know they're silver. Thank you for telling me. I can't see them. You know, they're on my ears.
Well,
don't call
yourself for military propaganda, right? Like,
but if they've got these cameras that can pick out like these tiny infantile little details on things from outer space, but yet their maps are so outdated that they accidentally hit the wrong target.
Well, this government puts up great works of fiction.
It's easy to laugh at the mistakes of an organization that employs 2 or 3 million people.
Yeah,
it's
right.
going to screw up once in a while, right? As far as military camera resolution, it's cute to say that they can actually look at your earrings, but actually resolution is limited to about a foot.
Right.
So they can't actually do that.
In ideal weather, Bosnia does not have.
But still, that doesn't justify the mistakes.
We have this money that we're using for all this technology, and then yet we still have maps that are...
Well, but again, any organization that large is going to make mistakes. They're tragic. They want to be avoided at all costs. But that's hardly an excuse to argue on its own, on the face, against all military action, because mistakes are an inevitable consequence of the application of force. There's no way around that. There's never been any way around that in there's never been any way around that, you know, sort of in the history of the mankind. The argument that I'm sorry, I've forgotten your
Mark.
Mark. The argument that Mark brought up, which is that there are certain kinds of military force that risk too much collateral damage, right? There's
nuclear
a reason why
weapons.
The U.S. doesn't drop, you know, chemical weapons or fuel air bombs, right? That's a legitimate argument, and that where that line is drawn, you have to temper humanitarian concerns along with sort of military goals. But, you know, it's not like the U.S. government is dropping cluster bombs into open-air markets. It doesn't want to get one or two people in. It doesn't mind killing 400 or 500.
No, agreed. At the same time, we sort of have to wonder if we're trying to break up a small network of terrorists in Afghanistan, very similar to, you know, the Osama bin Laden's desire to get the American government, why are we attacking these large cities just because we feel that the government houses the few people who are damaging us? You know, just as if we look at their the Al-Qaeda's claims about the United States government, why did they go attack the World Trade Center? I think if they had only hit the Pentagon, people's reaction would be very, very different.
Well, of course.
That's true.
But the question is, why can't we try to, you know, be a model unto the world, and instead of going after civilian targets and civilian populations, we're hitting their administrative buildings. Okay. There are janitors.
We're basically stooping to their level with this, and we're being just as terroristic to them as they were to us.
I think the UN should go in and should deal with the Al-Qaeda network, and it shouldn't do it by bombing these civilian targets, their versions of the World Trade Center. I mean, Afghanistan's been leveled a few times in the past 20 years.
So are you making the claim then that the Taliban's a legitimate government of Afghanistan?
No, I'm not making that claim, and I would like to see them overthrown by a popular movement opposed to another brutal regime put in their place by outside forces. I'm not pleased with the Northern Alliance. They held Kabul from 92 to 96, and they killed 500,000 people while they had it. They're in many ways no more legitimate than the Taliban. They're just sort of choosing one side of the same coin.
Okay, that's true. You bring up two interesting points. One is that you criticize the U.S. government for going after sort of military targets of the Afghanistan government instead of just going after
military units.
Instead of just going after Al-Qaeda, sort of who are the
Correct.
Really bad guys. That I don't think really holds up on analysis, because there's no way the U.S. could go after Al-Qaeda without the Afghanistan government. Let me finish. Trying to defend, the U.S. government can't issue police action in a sovereign country without that country trying to fight back, which would lead to an inevitable war between Taliban and the U.S. forces. As far as the Northern Alliance, nobody's happy with the Northern Alliance, right? But it's sort of the only other option. And you can see this coming up in the U.S. In the U.S. government and the U.N. and everything, where the attempt is to put together, again, the phrase that always gets thrown around, is the broad-based government.
Coalition.
Bringing back in the king, bringing in Pashtun, tribal leaders.
You know, explicitly leaving positions open on that whatever kind of ruling council is being set up for women to make sure it doesn't become another, like...
No, I agreed. And we support all of these efforts. We like the concept of a democratic government ruling Afghanistan. At the same time, supplying military assistance to the Northern Alliance to fight the Taliban in order to get rid of Al-Qaeda is like paying the Democrats to fight the Republicans to get rid of the special interests in Washington. It's like both the Northern Alliance and the Taliban are sort of these brutal dictatorships that have sort of terrorized the population of Afghanistan. We shouldn't support either of them.
So pragmatically, what would you suggest then?
Well, personally, I think the U.S. should have sort of put aside this immediate anger and gone straight to the UN, given all the support to a UN peacekeeping force that we could have. That's the way that we should deal with international problems.
Wait, but how would this UN peacekeeping force work? Would it invade Afghanistan?
Well, absolutely. In the same ways that we would go into Kabul and we would set up and we would stop the oppression of the women and various members of Afghanistan, we would prevent a lot of these atrocities from happening. What we tried to do in Kosovo, when there's massacres on this level, and we should go after Al-Qaeda through the UN, through UN resolutions and not through the American government.
Okay, but if the UN were actually, in effect, going to invade Afghanistan, wouldn't there have to be massive bombing and massive commitment of Western ground troops?
The UN has very different guidelines on what is and isn't acceptable. For example, if the U.S. wanted to use nuclear weapons, I wouldn't be surprised if it did. I don't think we want to at this point. The UN would not. And I'm more comfortable with an international coalition than with sort of...
But my point is, just from raw military effectiveness, if the UN is going to invade and actually take over Afghanistan...
They have to do the same thing.
They have to bomb.
And so is your issue merely as an American, you feel bad about America?
Is it the unilateralism itself?
At one level, I don't want the taxes I pay and the people I elect to be going and doing that. Agreed, as an American, I'm not happy with my government. And if the UN was bombing and, civilian populations, I'd be opposing them too.
Okay,
the point is, you just said, I'd rather have the UN do the military.
Correct.
operations in Afghanistan.
I was also wondering how much taxes have you paid? Paid for like one GI, you know, one soldier's sock.
I mean, and indirectly, U.S. tax money pays for the UN.
Right. Yes.
And the UN has no military force of its own.
If we paid our dues.
Yeah, no, that's abominable, but we don't have to get into
that. Well, Ted Turner did it for us, so we don't have to worry.
And UN forces are paid for by the taxes of their own countries, right?
Right. Correct. So, But to
get to this bombing civilian targets, I mean, again, the U.S. isn't trying to bomb civilian targets per se. It's trying to bomb things like military installations that happen to have civilian workers in it. And then there's lots of damage caused by bombs that are screwed up or that land in civilians. But again, if the U.N. went in and it wanted to win the war without a huge loss of ground troops, which would be political damaging to the countries that surprised them, I failed to see how they could do it without massive bombing from the air.
But you say that we don't want to bomb civilian populations. Isn't that list? That's what they said at the beginning of the Vietnam War. We later learned that they did bomb civilian populations to demoralize the country, to destroy the agricultural sectors of the country. That who knows? Like, all we have, the only information we have in Afghanistan is what the military is telling us, and that is, don't worry, we're being very precise. Our smart bombs, which were only 10% effective in the Gulf War, are now super effective, that we've learned so much, and that we're not damaging any civilians, and I just wonder what are our true objectives.
Okay, so your argument there is mildly deceptive because you want to argue that the U.S. might be bombing civilians on purpose, and the thing you used to back that up was the fact that we lied about smart bomb accuracy. So there's no question the military lies about the accuracy of weapons. We all know that, but that's a far cry from actually claiming that the U.S. stated objectives of defeating the military of Afghanistan are actually lies, and the U.S. actually wants to somehow genocide or eradicate large parts of the civilian population. So don't conflate those two things.
Oh, agreed. The analysis I made of the Vietnam War as well is that I could say that in a large-scale military conflict... we are laughing at a fork that has been flung across the room.
Yeah. A very dilapidated fork at this point.
Was quite simply that in order to win these conflicts, sometimes the military objectives are, in fact, to go after civilian populations.
True. And, I mean, again, our disagreement here comes down to essentially prior beliefs about how the government wants to act. Yeah. And I'm afraid we're not going to be able to resolve those.
I'm not a big fan of George Bush. No. I'll go on the record saying
can I second? Or I don't know. Did you already second that? Am I third here?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Something like that.
I mean, there aren't a lot of people in this room who are huge fans of George Bush. It's a particularly easy and cheap target for you guys to take a shot at.
Especially for me to align myself with the anti-George Bush crowd.
Yeah. Right. So I'd like to get into some...
Like making fun of Carrot Top.
Yeah, sort of.
So now that we've
talked about the actual sort of military issues, I'd like to get into some...
Excuse me, both the producer and I like George Bush a lot. Our producer's left the room.
You're full of lies. You do not.
I do. I'm switching my voter registration to Republican.
Did I just do that? Oh, man.
That's because you're involved with like...
Oh, wait. No, what's it sound? I think it's ice. I think hell just froze over.
Yes. That's just because I want to say I am a log cabin Republican.
Yes. I close my eyes and I think, gee, how would Al Gore have handled this tragedy? And, you know, baby Jesus Christ.
Well, I'm not saying that because I don't like Bush that I like Gore better. Yeah.
Well, for even greater laughs, let's think about how Nader would have handled it.
Actually, I think if we had Pat Buchanan as president, nuclear weapons.
That was a great face that you just made there.
It would be over nice and quick.
But anyway, so military issues and trade-offs between sort of civilian casualties and military objectives are an interesting topic. However, I'd like to get to more interesting political questions, like what you guys think of. So one of the places where we agree is that the Taliban has some problems, and that clearly Afghanistan has been dealt a horrible lot in life. What the hell are you guys doing?
Flying prunes.
He's throwing prunes at me.
Are you voluntarily eating prunes?
I was trying to Here's the thing that people don't realize out in America. A prune.
They're dried plums.
It's just a dried prune. What is more delicious
than a plum? They actually tried marketing them that way for a while because people wouldn't eat them because they were prunes. And so they called them dried plums. And people
plums
still didn't eat
slimy
them.
Like this.
You know, I could say the couch that Ed Gein made was just dried human skin. And yet that argument's not going to make my mom sit on it.
Human skin, dried plum, I don't
know. Right. I think your mom loves a good plum. So I think you're an allergy.
But not a dried plum. That's the key question.
I don't know. There's something about the flavor of plums that just gives me that odd zinc flavor in my mouth. I don't want it.
There are bite-sized prunes.
There's just a prune on the floor, so I'd eat it.
Well, I've been eating.
Yeah, Fat Man D was sitting in that area. I don't know.
Dude, I've been eating weirder stuff the past few nights, you know, out in
camp. Yeah, so what's it like? 1:30 in the morning in hippie central out there.
You guys hippies. You seem to be like Afghani village.
Boiled up and naked.
The interesting thing is some people have, I don't...
do you wear a mullah or whatever?
The look of our camp is sort of interesting because you have about nothing. I'm not a prune person.
It's just a dried plum.
We'll pass the dried
Nicole
plums
will
along.
Thank you. The producer of the show. Sweet prune.
But a lot of people have walked past and said, "You guys, you know, we have 10 of these marmot like blue camping tents," and they go, "Well, the Afghani refugees don't have tents."
Got a dumpstered shack.
Yeah, I personally, and along with at least one of us, if I don't know. Have you been in the shack? Have you been sleeping in the box?
No, the heater.
Yeah. No, you've got don't talk to me. He's got a space heater. That's just wrong.
The Afghans have a space heater.
We've got the tents. were donated. They belong to one of the clubs here at CMU, and they were allowing us to use them, but most of us, or at least a good number of us, have been sleeping in the shack, the box, whatever you want to call it. It's basically a three-sided lean-to, so to speak, made out of dumpstered wood.
Of the plays here, I guess, the scenery.
There's a ledge painted on the inside of it that I keep trying to put my glasses on, and it doesn't work because it's a flat surface made to look three-dimensional.
Let me ask you the following question, then. If there were enough tents for all, would you still live in the shack?
Yeah, there are empty tents.
There's a lot of late night, like.
And I've been wearing the same. I apologize. I should have said this in the beginning. I apologize for the funk that I emit. I have been wearing the same clothes for the past 3 days, sleeping in them and living in them.
That's okay. It balances out the sport guys.
Except the Afghanis don't bathe either.
Yeah, and I personally am using, you know, what we're doing here, not only as, you know, a direct action to show people, you know, what is going on, you know, mm-hmm. how these people are living, and also to protest the war, but I'm also using it as a way to personally connect with it, because I feel that living in the United States, and, you know, it's such a cliche word, but I'm going to use it anyway, in a bourgeois country, where it's a cliche, but
it's a French word. As is cliche.
Yeah, as is cliche. There you go. It's the U.S. Even the impoverished in the United States live at such a luxurious level compared to so many people in the world that this experience for me is very connecting to what's going on, and so
definitely. I personally did a fast for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Some people are fasting in a Ramadan style, in honor of Ramadan, and, you know, not eating or drinking during the day. But
I've been eating what I can find, which is very little.
You know, there are restaurants like 50 feet away from you.
But there's the problem of not having more. I think I have a quarter in my pocket.
We could bring you O-fries.
Yeah, or you could panhandle.
I've been doing the dumpster thing, but then there's also the problem of dumpstering things and then finding out that it's not vegan and that I can't eat it to begin with.
Go freegan.
I would go freegan, but I'd go really sick in the interim.
What is freegan for our listeners?
Freegan is
eat anything that's free?
Almost anything that's free. If something's going to be disposed of and go to a landfill and it's not necessarily vegan, you still eat it.
Would you eat anything on a dare then?
No, I think a dare is probably a little different because the consumerism is still in there and it's not going to be
definitely
really wasted.
I'll give you a dollar to eat this, you know, cupcake that I smeared with mayo and mustard, or I'll throw it out
and then rub it in my butt.
the mayo and mustard alone is disgusting.
It's a personal choice for all freegans.
That just reminds me of the tequila and mayonnaise shot that a friend of mine did on his 21st birthday. I'm sorry, I think that's most of this. The first shot was straight tequila. The final shot of the evening was tequila and mayonnaise, and that just makes one wonder.
I guess it helps to buffer.
God, I hope I'm never 21.
Yeah, I know. I think I'm going to skip 21. I think I'm going to go straight from 20 to 22.
So, I have two comments making this, although I fear I'm interrupting DJ Corey.
Well, I just have one comment. I mean, the question, the thing you haven't covered
I mean, sort of nice.
We haven't covered
like,
a lot, but
well, late night tent swapping, yeah. Like some French sex forest.
Well, exactly. You're all
oh, the
sex,
love shack.
There's a love shack.
We did label it on the inside. It does say the love shack.
Why are we not broadcasting like, from the love shack?
Is this not all? This
I don't think we could fit. Well, we could fit. I don't think we could.
I think we had about six people.
Just like the anti-war protests of the '60s were just a thin excuse for
free
love. This is just.
Oh, just Rumsfeld isn't getting any from this. I mean.
There is the obvious the fact that we had last night upwards of seven or eight people cram into the shack. I think I counted
I was
at one
for a
point
down there.
What, like daisy chain?
Well, cram into the box. I've been personally calling it a box. It was. My mom asked me, are you going to go look for a job today? No, I'm going to go sleep in a box. But we had at least 10 at one point all crammed in the box and just snuggling together under piles of blankets for body heat.
So we have to keep warm somehow.
I know. I mean,
know?
Definitely. It's, and
how come I'm never invited?
Because you've got a space heater and you don't need the body heat.
Technologists don't get any action there.
Yeah.
So like, can you like swear to me on your little stack of Madeline Murray O'Hare Bibles or whatever? People read that.
Emma Goldman.
Emma Goldman's a famous anarchist.
A famous woman anarchist back in the 1920s.
She was a friend of my grandfather's, actually.
Seriously?
Seriously.
And there was a very good song about her in Ragtime.
Oh,
very
musical.
Emma Goldman is one
of my.
We were
about to swear or something.
Anyhow,
right.
You were saying we are swearing on a stack of Emma Goldman.
Have you had sex 3 days or masturbated in the tents or not? If you're not giving up sexuality, then I don't think you're truly experiencing.
Dedicated?
I don't know. Do refugees really give up sexuality? I think I'm seeing a lot of babies popping out there.
Intriguing.
Interesting.
Definitely interesting.
However, you've
But babies and sex
personally,
is
I'm
a true act
realism.
Revolution.
But
yeah, there's a degree of 100% realism of the fact that we still are using the flush toilets that belong to CMU campus, and I'm quite thankful for this.
It is
quite cold.
You should really just put a crack in the glass of that like underground chamber and put a tarp over that.
Well, that underground chamber freaks me out. I stood on it for a while and was really creeped out.
This is more than just realism of a actual refugee camp, but obviously tents that are, blue tents that are donated from the Explorers
Club. We're laughing at
just
poking at.
There's nothing to see here.
Calf muscles of.
I don't think anyone's going to benefit from my personal suffering. That's not why I'm doing this, and that's why everyone's laughing at me for the guy who's staying warm at night. At the same time, they will benefit. We've collected over 50 blankets so far. We're doing this to sort of raise awareness, and that's how we're going to help people.
Right, we're getting away from the subject of Brenda and her sex life.
Oh, now it's all me and my sex life.
You skillfully dodged DJ Corey's question about. About the orgasmorific.
Oh, what was the question? I missed it.
Are you having sex or masturbating the tent? That was the question.
Sex.
I saw some wriggling going on last night.
Right, in the past 96
wriggling?
Hours, have you had an
That's
orgasm?
A great word. Wriggling is a great word.
Dodging the question.
I like wriggling.
Actually, the official show word is
no.
Wriggling.
The answer to that would be a definite no.
So has there been any sex in the camp so far, you think?
I don't know
about that.
None that's been involved with me. None that's been involved with me because, I'm sorry, my pants are not coming off because then I would get very cold.
Only for a brief moment. But
that brief moment makes a big difference to me.
But,
very big difference.
You could, I don't know, as the Inuit do, slather yourself with bear fat.
That's not vegan, dude.
That's true.
Unless it's in a dumpster.
Oh!
Slather yourself with tofu, then.
Oh, that'd be cold.
Or natto. Anyway, but sex in the camps. Is it going on?
Not to my knowledge. There's lots of random innuendo and dumb jokes. But
I don't know. There's a lot of cuddling. I mean.
Yeah, lots of cuddling.
Cuddling.
My dog and...
Oh, yeah, the two dogs
and
are
Layla
really
were kind of getting in. Yeah.
If your dog had sex with somebody, we're spending the rest of the show on that.
Layla is another
Layla
dog.
Layla is another puppy.
Oh, okay. Oh,
well, sorry for the confusion.
I have to interrupt this to broadcast some of my outrage. I think I'm picking up a little bit of your political activism, because if there's one thing this country doesn't need, it's to become more commercial, more like driven by... merchandising and the wheels of commerce, right? And therefore, I'm embarrassed by the appearance of my co-host. who has prostituted himself and become a walking billboard for
Tricon United.
Yes, for Taco Bell.
Tricon United?
Yeah.
They own Taco Bell now, right?
Yes, and Pizza Hut and the Trilateral Commission.
You know,
and,
interesting,
interesting
anecdote on Pizza Hut, especially for those of the vegan / vegetarian community, is if anybody has, other than me, has gone to a Pizza Hut and asked for a cheeseless pizza, they will not do it. And for the longest time, I wondered, you know, why everybody else, every other pizza company will do this. And I was like, it must be against their, like, rules. Turns out that if you've had pizza, their sauce is sweet to a degree. They put sugar in it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they make a cheeseless pizza, if they bake it, there gets this almost a centimeter thick layer of carbon on top of the sauce from the sugar, that they would do this, and people would refuse the pizza, so they no longer do it. So that's why you cannot get a cheeseless pizza at Pizza Hut.
Well, I want to be sensitive to our hippie guests, so
Man, I've been getting the hippie flack all week.
I've been taking my shirt off.
You're living
is that truly sensitive to their needs, or is it just all about your selfishness?
It's all about you just wanting to take your clothes off, but it's okay.
Well, I guess this is a section.
Spoken like a true long-term listener of the show.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was wondering when the question was, you know, if the answer to a question is no, you have to remove an article of clothing or something. I was waiting for that to sneak itself in.
They're wise
in
their ways, Mr.
Okay, well, because it's cold tonight, I actually have two shirts on, so let me just...
You know
okay.
The other one is a Taco Bell shirt as well.
There's one over there.
No, the other one is Bin Laden having sex with
a goat. Oh, God. Okay, just quick comment. You say cold, you have two. I've got my one
and
shirt
so
on the table. I've got another.
For our people without the webcam.
For our listeners, we should...
Four shirts.
Dr. His second shirt. Hidden underneath his pants.
Well, yeah, I noticed the hole before.
No. It's radio. Our listeners have no idea what
so
he's doing.
So to paint a vivid word picture for our listeners at home, the second shirt that DJ Kuro is wearing underneath, of course, has a big American flag on it and a mean-looking eagle, and it says, let's get ready to rumble.
And what is the eagle doing? Is he, like, filing his talons?
He's getting ready to rumble.
That's right.
The eagle, what is in his hand?
Well, let me explain to you.
Crack bite.
The eagle is going to take his, like, incredibly precise vision and incredibly sharp talons, and it's going to fly over to the little rat's nest that's, like, Osama bin Laden's
and smoke him out of their hole.
And he's going to, like, bite their heads off and, like, piss in their
graves.
Well, I think that'd probably be a little...
I like the quick shot. The quick look over there. Can I...
I'm still a citizen of this country and I have to obey the FCC.
Yes.
Until you, you know, adopt your...
Well, just think of the Taliban probably wouldn't even let you think the word piss, though, so...
Can you say that word?
I don't know.
We just said it.
I don't know.
I don't think we're supposed to.
As a woman, I don't think I can.
I'm seeing a thumbs down on this one.
I don't know what it means, guys.
What?
Well, we'll send you a copy of our water sports show.
If I had another one of these shirts, would you wear it as sort of an ironic, hippie, like, commentary thing?
I want the one that has Bin Laden's picture and a target, and it says, got ammo. Like, that's what I really like. It's like, I don't know if you guys remember when Craig Kilborn did that during the presidential election, and, you know, it was almost kicked off the air. Well, they did it again.
Wait,
and
no, what did he do?
Oh, he did one with then-Governor Bush, and he said, like, snipers wanted. And now it's got Bin Laden, it's got ammo, and it's probably making some bastard, like, millions of dollars. But
well, it's the miracle of capitalism.
It is.
You provide what people want at a reasonable price, and you make a fortune.
Such as ammo.
Exactly. Or such as American flags made in China.
Yeah,
I
enjoyed
that. Made, by the way?
They're a most favored trade nation. How dare you?
You just gave him an excuse to take off the shirt.
I walked home one day.
Oh, did you bring three? One for each of our guests?
Yeah, I did. I wonder if they're going
to
wear them.
How did you have time to do this?
That's why he was late.
Oh. Wow, you're a miracle of preparedness and prop
well,
comedy.
I got home one day
from
camp. Oh, great! No child labor there.
I bet they're ready to rumble.
NAFTA, right? Are they?
Yes.
Are they part of?
Yeah,
no,
they're
not part
of NAFTA. They're going to be part of
the
Free Trade of America.
The
FTA,
right?
World One.
Yeah.
U.S. number one dot.
org.com.org.
Until all of the activists stop the free trade area of the Americas.
If you guys don't want to do that to my producer,
I'm totally wearing one.
If you'll do it, I'll do it.
Okay, the camp's going to disown you guys.
No, dude. Have you ever heard of a thing called. I have a feeling I'm seeing the up the punks written across this by the end of the night.
I have three. I'm sorry, I didn't realize. The thing is,
well, you don't really need that one. Everybody knows the way you feel.
Yeah, look at that eagle, jeez.
Dude, this thing cut.
$10
Ten American dollars.
Like $2 and got donated to like whatever.
Okay, and how much? Okay.
Do you really think I'm this fat?
Do you think I? He know he's seen me before. He knows, but that's on top of a couple
of
layers.
Of loose clothing.
Well, you had the vestigial twin before.
I've got a lot of layers.
And you could sell. You could sell it to buy food too.
Right.
Yes. Well, you know, it would make a nice pillow tonight as well. I will have to make the comment. There was the comment about no sweatshops there and that sort of thing. I a lot of activists get mad at me on this one. I am anti-sweatshop, but I'm also pro-sweatshop, and I know it sounds... listen, hear me out before you laugh at me.
I think I know where you're
me.
Going on this, Brenda.
What?
I think I
we're
know where you're going
you
on this.
We're actually with you, and we're glad you're growing up. Sounds like Linda, Brenda's been reading The Economist.
What it is because... It's the cultural relativism that we were talking about before, is that these sweatshops, what we are calling sweatshops for them, is the best job you can get there. You've got a roof over your head, you've got four walls, you're getting paid,
okay.
And you're not breaking your back out in the sun. Granted, a lot of the there's no reason that these people should be locked into a building and forced to work for very little money and have horrible conditions. But in some countries where there are these sweatshops, they are the best jobs, and people train their kids to be able to go work there so that
they
can make money.
They also sell their kids to these people.
They're
tricked into selling their kids. People,
I bought six of them yesterday.
Well, exactly. I mean, I'm not saying that part of it is a positive.
Spent money on third world kids and didn't buy her food? So she gets a dumpster diving?
Well,
I am
he didn't say that.
What do you think
about
the kids?
Yeah, sorry.
There's a difference
between
people a job and being a responsible company and making sure that these people's lives aren't complete terror, where people are beaten, people are severely taxed and turned into slaves for their entire lives because, you know, a person sends their child to go work in some factory or something to pay off a debt.
Exactly.
And, you know, they sign this contract where they press their thumbs in ink and they don't know that, you know, because they're illiterate and they can't write, and they don't know that their children are going off for their entire lives because every day their child gets served a bowl of rice.
Well, certainly
and
not
they have
all,
to pay for that.
All of what
that's
we call
not,
sweatshops
no.
are like...
Right. Yeah. The thing is, it's not all sweatshops aren't evil and all sweatshops aren't good. And it's that sort of... That's why I said I'm anti sweatshops, but at the same time, I understand them, and you know, I understand it to a degree. And I think that there's a lot of reform that needs to be done in that department, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done. It's basically being an educated, as far as in this world, sadly, you have to be a consumer to a degree. It's very hard to be completely autonomous in this world as it is right now. And so it's being an educated consumer and sort of knowing, doing your homework and knowing which companies have the balls to stand up for.
And boycotting as well isn't one of the best.
Not necessarily. I don't want to get too deep in this debate. I'm going to bring up two facts, though. One is that actually jobs in the third world that are generated are all the foreign direct investment under which sweatshops would come under actually almost universally pay significantly higher than jobs generated by domestic investment. Secondly, as you just brought up, boycotting isn't always the right thing because trade is trade and it does help the other country, even if sometimes the conditions under which it happens are abominable. And I'm very pleased to see that this is sort of developed in the 90s. What happens is that companies that do right by their sort of foreign things get sort of brownie points from certain consumer groups, which sort of reinforces good behavior. And so that's something. Anyways, we're getting way far away from sex again. And so I want to just before we go cover sort of get back to one last topic, which isn't about, you know, getting nasty sex, but more about sort of gender issues, which is that so the Taliban, before the whole, you know, brouhaha came up, was notorious for its treatment of women. Like, you know, Afghanistan used to have, under the communists, as the communists actually almost always do, relatively progressive policies towards women. When the Taliban came in, they couldn't go to school. They couldn't, you know, there's all sorts of things, right? They couldn't hold jobs, right?
The suicide rate of women in Afghanistan tripled once the Taliban came into power because women went from, you know, leading lives of education and working and sustaining themselves to being not even allowed to walk down the street. Women were doused in acid very regularly. It was an abominable situation. And
no, don't get us wrong. We're glad to see them go. I mean, it's a bad cycle. When you get rid of half of your, you know, intellectual labor force by not letting women go to college, your country isn't going to go anywhere. I mean, and it was a bad cycle that they were in. We're glad to see them gone. We would like to see some long-term lasting change. What we're very nervous about is that it's just going to regress into another bad cycle.
Yeah, Rawa.
Yeah, there's, actually, that's something we should promote. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is an Afghani woman or Afghan woman coming this Thursday at Chatham College at 7:30 to speak. She's a representative of Rawa, the Revolutionary Afghan Women's Association. And she will know better than we do, obviously, what it's like to be a woman in Afghanistan. And
say that again. Chatham College, what day?
This Thursday, the 6th, at 7:30.
So, I mean, this leads to an interesting point because, you know, before the whole, you know, before the attacks and everything, there was a certain, you know, certain sort of activist minority that was clearly trying to bring, you know, this plight of women in Afghanistan to the attention. But it raises an interesting question in my mind that I never am able to quite get my head around, which is that of sort of cultural relativism, right? Clearly. At some level, the you know, international society is built on the idea that countries can regulate their own internal affairs, which include even such repugnant things as genital mutilation,
not allowing women to vote,
right? Mm-hmm. And yet there's this tension because Western countries, at least certain elements of them, really want to apply pressure to change them that way.
Right.
And the line of sort of what rights do other society, you know, what rights do other societies have to attempt to, like, adjust the morals of another is a difficult one. Now that America's perceived, you know, sort of core interests are at stake, it's a whole other story, and the U.S. is acting, you know, laterally. But when things aren't like that, you know, when there's no sort of, you know, thing that provokes an entire nation military action, like, for example, situations in Sudan or pre-September 11th Afghanistan, it's not clear what should be done. What do you guys think?
Well, there is a large with, like you brought up, female genital mutilation, mm-hmm. and basically the plight of women in various third world countries, you know, Afghanistan included, and there is a rising amount of women in those countries who are beginning to stand up and say, look, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We are people. We are not going to stand for this, you know, mothers protecting their daughters, where in the past, if, you know, something happened and, like, where men can throw acid on a girl who turns him down for marriage or for anything, women, mothers protecting their daughters, you know, putting their lives in danger to protect their daughters and say, look, this is wrong. I'm not letting her go through what I went through.
However, Nance's point is that,
you know,
isn't it culturally relativist, isn't it Westerocentric, isn't it, like, colonial for us to say, we know best how to treat women, you must do the following Western Christian
things. I find there's some things that are reprehensible and that are never acceptable, like female genital mutilation. We can never stand up for that. I'm not going to claim to have any answer.
Male genital mutilation is acceptable?
No genital mutilation.
So where are the protests against circumcision?
No. Well, I'm proud of my circumcision. I don't want anyone to take that away from me.
No. I don't know the answer to that question, which is how do we, you know, impose our morals and ethics without dominating?
Without imposing our morals and ethics.
Exactly.
But at the same time, look at the culture that we're trying to bring them into.
Yeah, it's something.
You know, like Mark, like
oh,
you always
it's
say.
Just like, why do we free up the women of Afghanistan so we can give them all eating disorders at age 14?
I mean, that's a good slogan to say, but honestly, where would you rather grow up as a woman?
Well, agreed. And if I had the answer to this question, I'd be a multimillionaire philosopher writing all the time. I mean, like,
I'm a multimillionaire philosopher. Along with the multi-billionaire poet.
I don't think anyone has answered this question, though.
You'd be rich in love.
That is part of, you know, like with my work with Amnesty, is it's part of the purpose of the UDHR, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, is to try and get.
Which America has not signed.
Right. The U.S. is being. Word that I can't say because the FCC will be very mad at me.
Petulant.
What?
Petulant.
Petulant works as well.
Suave. Sorry.
The U.S. is being very asinine about.
Well, so would signing the declaration mean that we could no longer have our cherished death penalty, for example?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I would not say death penalty personally.
It's certainly cherished. You don't cherish it. 80% of my...
I mean, actually, popular majorities in America and many European countries are actually pro-death penalty, so it is pretty cherished, actually.
But I'm not sure if the popular majority was to lynch all black people, it would be a good thing.
Exactly.
Well, please, that's an enormously inflammatory
that's a straw man big enough to burn at Burning Man next.
I mean, certainly the U.S. death penalty is implemented incredibly biasedly, as the Illinois governor who declared a moratorium on it did the complete right thing to do. But that doesn't mean that the death penalty in principle. That's not an argument against the death penalty in principle.
And also, it's not an argument that if a majority of the population in the U.S. doesn't support something, that our government should do the same. I invoked too many negatives there. The point being,
I got it.
Yeah, no,
but that was sort of the purpose of the UDHR is to try and make so that we can instead of just trying to westernize everything is to come with a level of agreement.
If we signed it, wouldn't we have to cut back on the fisting too? Isn't that?
Yeah, I think that's unfortunately part of it. But free trade for bukkake.
On that note, I'm afraid we're out of time. I'd like to thank you guys very much for coming on. It's been an unusually passionate, in the asexual sense, argumentative and discussion show. But
thank you.
What was up for that?
No, thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, and come on out and donate the blankets.
Yes,
come visit us.
And local food banks.
Yes, we cannot urge people in the blankets. Really, I sound like a jackass saying that, but it's a basic human truth.
And I think the people in the camps definitely need porn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And bring some food. They need food, too.
They need food.
But yes, definitely the blankets for people in Afghanistan, because their winters there, people don't realize, are just like here. You know, they're just as bad, and these people have nothing. And it will end up saving somebody's life.
This is WRCT Pittsburgh. Tune in next week, Tuesday at 11.